Lady Audley's Secret by Mary Elizabeth Braddon, dramatized for radio by Jack Gratis, with Nigel Havers as Robert Audley, Nicholas Gex as George Tallboys, Nigel Stock as Sir Michael Audley, and Amanda Murray as Lady Audley. London, September 1857.
Oh, I say, take care, old fellow. You almost knocked me down.
No, I'm sorry.
Good Lord. It's Robert Audley. Do we know each other?
Yes, Tallboys. George Tallboys. We were at Eton together.
You don't mean to say you've forgotten?
No, I have not. I just didn't recognize you behind that beard.
Ah, I grew that in Australia. Only touched British soil last night.
And to think, we meet this morning. This calls for a celebration. What do you say to a spot of dinner at the Crown and Scepter in Greenwich? Or if you prefer...
Not at present, Bob. I have some important matters to attend to first.
Look, I know I can trust you. You were always a good chap. I have £20,000 in my pocket, and I can't be comfortable until it's in safekeeping with my bankers.
£20,000? My dear boy, but of course... And after that, we can have dinner.
No, after that, I must go to Westminster. A letter's awaiting me at a certain coffee house that means everything to my future happiness.
Well, then I'll go with you. Now that we've found each other again, I've no intention of losing you.
Can I help you, sirs?
Is there a letter waiting for me? I directed it be sent here. The name's Tallboys, George Tallboys.
I shall inquire.
But please, be quick about it. It's very important.
And bring us 2 glasses of punch.
Yes, sir.
My brain dawdles hopelessly, and I've fallen far behind you, George. So maybe start from where you first met your wife.
Helen. Oh, how I ache to see her again. 3.5 years and never out of my thoughts. There were times, Bob, out there in the heat of the sun, when all I had was my memory of her to keep me from ending my life. Everything seemed so hopeless.
Well, it's a jolly good thing you didn't. You met your wife while you were an officer in the cavalry, is that correct?
Yes, we were quartered at a stupid seaside town where my darling lived with her father, a half-pay naval officer more often drunk than sober.
Your punch, gentlemen.
Yes, but where's my letter?
They're still looking for it.
Damn it, man, can't you see I'm anxious?
I'm sorry, sir, but they don't seem to be...
Tallboys, T-A-L-B-O-Y-S. I used to frequent this place years ago. I'm surprised no one recognizes me.
It's your beard, George.
I assure you, they are looking...
Insolent fellow.
You were saying about your wife's father.
Oh, yes. Well, he was out to catch one of us officers for his pretty daughter. Fortunately, that was me. My father's rich, but money never came into it for Helen and me. It was love at first sight, and we made a match of it.
Bravo. I'm all for love and abhor money.
Well, that's all very well when you've got it, but when you haven't... My father's an absolute Roman of the old school when it comes to living by the rules. For him, right is right and wrong is wrong. When he heard I'd married a penniless girl, he sentenced me to death. He wrote me a furious letter telling me he wanted no more to do with me and stopped my allowance.
Awkward for you.
Very. I couldn't afford to remain in the regiment with nothing but my pay to live on and my pretty wife to keep, so I sold out. I had 2,000 in the bank and I was confident I'd find something... before that ran out. Well, we travelled to Italy, spent 6 months there, living in splendid style, then back to England. My pet has a kind heart and didn't want to leave her father on his own, so we went to live with him. And poor Papa quickly helped us to spend on drink what little we had left, and I went up to London to try and find a position.
What were you looking for?
What, clerk, accountant, bookkeeper, anything of that kind. Hopeless.
I'm not surprised. A hulking great dragoon like you.
I realized as much, but there was such a storm of sobs when I returned to my little girl empty-handed. She told me I oughtn't to have married her and given her a child if all I could promise was a life of poverty and misery. Mm-hmm. By heaven, her tears and reproaches almost drove me mad.
Is that when you decided to go to Australia?
I was in a rage. Against her, her father, the world, but most of all, against myself. I walked about the streets all day and was in half a mind to throw myself into the sea. I went down to the pier, meaning to wait there till dark, then drop quietly over. Two men came down, and after a while I caught the gist of their conversation. how, with a bit of determination and luck, anyone could make a fortune at the gold diggings in Australia. I got talking to them and learnt there was a boat leaving from Liverpool within a day or two.
What did your wife think of the idea?
She knew nothing of it.
What?
She was asleep, with little Georgie on her breast, when I left her. I wrote her a note telling her how much I loved her and that I wasn't deserting her but was going to try my fortune in the new world. 3 nights later, I was bound for Melbourne, steerage, with digger's tools for my baggage.
And you succeeded, by Jove.
Eventually. But not till I'd suffered every imaginable hardship. Only the memory of my darling held me together.
Didn't you ever write and tell her how you were faring?
What good would it have done? I had to toil on through disappointment, despair, right to the very gates of death. Then, one wet, miserable morning, my luck changed. I was up to my neck in mud and mire, half-starved and almost insane with the raging fever, when a nugget, a real monster, turned up under my spade. And suddenly I was one of the richest men in Australia. I rushed off to Sydney, sold the nugget, and arranged my passage home, first class.
And is your wife now expecting you?
As soon as I was ready to sail, I wrote to Helen, telling her when I should be in England, and suggesting she write to me care of this coffee house with her new address, if she were no longer with her father. Ah, waiter! Have you found it?
These are all we've got.
Let me see. Brown, Sanderson, Pinchbeck. No Tallboys.
That must mean she's still with her father, and so she didn't bother to reply.
Yes, I expect you're right.
Then let's be gone. This place depresses me.
I must book into an hotel. I've had no time even to wash and shave since I disembarked.
Now, what's this talk of an hotel? George Tallboys, you'll be residing with me in my humble barrister's chambers. So long as you don't mind dogs. Here's the Times, George, while we're waiting for Mrs. Maloney to prepare our dinner.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh, you don't mind the pipe, do you?
Not at all.
All these beastly curs of mine. I don't know what it is, but I only have to walk outside my front door and I have a file of them following behind me.
It's your kind heart, Bob. Dogs have an instinct.
My soft heart, you mean. Now get down, you wretched creature.
Lord, no. It can't be.
What is it, Doctor?
I think I must be going mad. Look, in the Times, there. Tell me I've read it wrongly. Tell me I've made a mistake.
Deceased on the 24th inst at Ventnor, Isle of Wight, Helen Tallboys, aged 22. Helen Tallboys?
Surely. No. Who else could it be? That's her age, and Tallboys is an uncommon name. Helen!
Don't, there's a good chap. Try to hold on till we know for sure.
I must go to Ventnor immediately.
But it's too late tonight.
Then by first train tomorrow. Helen!
Well, dear chap, now that we're here, what do we do?
I don't know.
There's an hotel. Perhaps they can tell us if a Mrs. Tallboys came through. Venner's a small enough town.
Her father's name is Malden.
Right.
He could never have sent her here to die alone.
Sir, my friend and I are looking for a gentleman, name of Malden.
Captain Malden?
That's him.
We see him frequently.
Sad business, his daughter.
What about her?
Passed away not a week ago.
Steady, old fellow. Do you perhaps know Captain Malden's address?
Yes, I have it here. We had to apply to him for...
how much does he owe you?
It's only a matter of £8, sir.
He hasn't changed. Here you are.
Thank you, sir. His address is Lansdowne Cottage, number 4.
He's gone down to the beach with little Georgie, his grandson, but he should be back soon for George's dinner. He won't let him miss that. He's so good with the little one. So, if you gentlemen will sit here a while.
Thank you.
Are you by any chance related to her what passed away so sadly?
My friend is.
Oh, very sick she was. She came here only 10 days before she died. Incurable, I could see. What relation, if I may ask?
Her husband.
What? He must have deserted her, so cruel.
I did not desert her. Tell her, Bob, tell her.
My friend went off to Australia to make his fortune.
Well, that's as may be. But he left her with a pretty boy upon her father's hands, which Captain Walden's told me often enough. Tears in his eyes, poor fellow.
Did she speak of me at the last?
No. She went off quiet as a lamb. All the while she was here, she said very little. But the last day she knew nobody, not even a little boy, nor a poor old father who took on awful. Once she went off wild-like talking about her mother and about the cruel shame it was to leave her to die in a strange place. Pitiful it was to hear her.
Her mother? Her mother died when she was a child. Why her mother and not me?
Oh, seeing as how you are her husband, you may care to have this. I kept it in the drawer here.
What is it?
Oh, don't you recognize it? It's a lock of her hair.
But her hair had a rippling wave in it, and this is smooth and straight.
Illness, that changes it.
Yes, of course.
Come, old fellow. Let's go and find your father-in-law.
That's a fine boy you've got, George.
Well, I'll be happy when they've settled back in Southampton. And I'm very grateful to you both. I hope you won't find being George's guardian too much of a burden.
Well, it is a responsibility, I must admit. Robert Audley's notorious among his friends for being unable to look after anything, even himself.
But are you sure, George, this is what you want to do? Leave your son? Go back to Australia?
I think it's for the best, boy. This country's hateful to me. I'll be better off back at the diggings. That's all I'm really fit for now. Come to think, just 2 nights ago I was steaming into Liverpool full of hope of holding Helen in my arms again. All the plans I had for her.
George, I've got an idea. Last year, a friend, another barrister like myself, suggested we winter in St. Petersburg. I was spending the vacation with my uncle, Sir Michael Audley, at Audley Court, so I couldn't accept. But what do you say to my reviving the plan and going this winter, the three of us?
Oh, Bob, you've a noble heart.
But you don't have to make up your mind right away. Just think about it, and in the meantime, please consider my chambers your home.
My dear cousin Robert, how cruel of you to run away to that horrid St. Petersburg before the hunting season when you should be with us at Audley Court. I've heard that people lose their noses in that disagreeable climate, and as yours is a very long one, I should advise you to return before the very severe weather sets in. What sort of person is this Mr. Tallboys you wrote to me about? What a sad story. If he's very agreeable, you may bring him to the court. Papa is perfectly absurd about his new wife, but she and I cannot get on together at all. Oh, not that she's disagreeable to me, for as far as that goes, she makes herself agreeable to everyone. But she is so irretrievably childish and silly. Believe me to be your affectionate cousin, Alicia.
I say, George, do you realize what month is it?
August. Almost a year to the day since I learnt about my darling Helen's death.
A few days from now will be the 1st of September. I shall write to my cousin Alicia, you'll like her, and tell her we'll both run down to Audley Court for a week's shooting. It's far too long since I was last there. What do you say to that?
No. No, Bob, then. Go by yourself. They don't want me, and I'd rather...
Bury yourself in London with no company but my dogs and canaries. No, George, you'll do nothing of the kind.
But I don't care for shooting.
I can't tell a partridge from a pigeon, and I loathe killing either. I only go down to Essex for the change of air, good dinners, and the sight of my uncle's honest, handsome face. Besides, now there's another attraction, my new fair-haired aunt. Come, say you'll join me.
Oh, all right, if you wish it.
There are 17 spare bedrooms at Audley Court, but for all that, you can't come. My lady has taken it into her silly head that she is too ill to entertain visitors. She says she cannot have great rough men in the house. Please, apologize to your friend.
My lady's airs and graces shan't keep us out of Essex, George. There's a good inn at Audley.
Hmm?
Plenty of fishing in the neighbourhood. And fishing's better than shooting. You only have to lie on a bank and stare at your line. We'll go there and have a week's sport.
Excellent. What did I tell you, George?
Very good.
Gad, nothing like country air to give a man an appetite. You've already got some colour in your cheeks. We've been pent up for too long in London since we returned from St. Petersburg. Now, put on your hat and we'll stroll down to Audley Court. What's happening out there?
I say, it's my uncle's carriage. I'll run down and speak to him.
Uncle!
Why, Robert! This is a surprise. We've just come from the races at Chorley. They had a spot of bother with the harness.
Well, my friend and I were just on our way to pay our respects.
Your friend, Mr. Tallboys? Has he come? Oh, I'm so glad. I'm dying to see this handsome young widow.
Are you, Alicia? Then, egad, I'll run and fetch him.
Not now, Mr. Audley. Oh, Sir Michael.
All right, my dear. We've had a long day, Bob. Bring your friend to dinner tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow. Then he and Alicia can make each other's acquaintance.
Don't gawp at my lady cousin.
But she's lovely.
Oh, dear. Another victim.
Are you ready to go, sir?
Good. See you tomorrow, Bob.
Bye.
What a glorious creature. Such blue eyes, George. Such ringlets. Such a ravishing smile. And her bonnet. George, you know what? I think I'm falling in love with my aunt.
What?
I think you've got a bite, Bob.
What? Oh, yes. I believe you're right. Go away, stupid fish. It's much too hot to bother catching you.
Bob? I'm not a romantic man, as you know. Never read a line of poetry that wasn't a jingle of words to me. But since Helen's death, a feeling has come over me that I'm like a man standing on a shore with a black tide crawling slowly and surely round my feet. Not rushing upon me, but creeping pitilessly towards me, ready to close in above my head when I'm least prepared for it.
Heavens above, George.
Yeah, you're right to laugh at me. It's absurd, I know, yet...
I say, who's that?
Steady now, Atalanta, steady. It's only my lazy cousin and his friend. I thought I'd find you here.
Alicia. Let me introduce you. My friend, George Tallboys, my cousin, Alicia Audley.
How do you do?
Welcome to Audley, Mr. Tallboys.
Thank you.
Now, what news of Lady Audley? We received the message early this morning that she was called urgently to London.
Yes, it seems her old employer, Mrs. Vincent, who keeps the school, is desperately ill and wishes to see her for the last time. Oh, such a kind, sweet person is my lady that she could not refuse.
What a pity to miss her, and a good dinner too, I'm sure.
Oh, but despite the urgency, she had time to write to me before she left, asking particularly how long you're going to stop. She wants to be back in time to receive you. It would seem, Bob, that you've made a great impression on her.
You're mocking me, cousin.
Oh, here's her letter. See for yourself.
It's the prettiest, most coquettish little hand I ever saw.
Give it me back. Let me go and answer it. Well, what shall I tell her?
I'd like to get back tomorrow, Bob. I want to take a run down to Southampton to see the little one. I want to make sure he's properly settled in at school.
The little one?
It's George's son. Oh. He lives with his grandfather. No fear, old fellow. We'll soon be on our way.
Tired of Audley already? But I suppose that now my lady's not here, there's nothing to keep you.
Well, my chambers do have their charms, even in the long vacation.
But it'd be a pity to leave without showing George around Audley Court. Can you arrange for us to have a conducted tour, Alicia?
Oh, I suppose so.
Before it's dark.
Then you'd best come now. I'll ride on.
Pretty girl, your cousin.
If you care for dark, gypsy looks.
I'd say she was in love with you.
Rot. What could she see in an indolent fellow like me? I'll never make any mark on the world, become rich and famous as a barrister. I'm much too fond of my pipe, my dogs and canaries, and a lie down with a good book. Not the sort of man for a bouncy girl like that. Come, let's collect our tackle and be off. I'd like to show you the grounds before we go in. This avenue leads to the house. You see that clock up there, on the arch? Notice anything about it?
It's only got one hand.
Mm-hmm. And it jumps straight from one hour to the next. Stupid thing. Now, through this archway, and we're in the grounds. Magnificent lawns, what? Superb rhododendrons. Best in the country. And over there are the kitchen gardens, fish pond, and an excellent orchard. And behold, Audley Court. What do you think of it?
Superb. How old is it?
Ancient. Built at the time of the Conquest, but every generation has added something to it. The Plantagenets, the Tudors, right up to the Georgians. And that's why it's so hodgepodge and rambly. Hundreds of rooms, staircases, secret passages. You can easily lose yourself in it. And over there is the Lime Tree Walk. The old trees have grown so thickly you can walk through it and be completely hidden from the world. At the end of it is an old well. No one knows how deep it is. I'd show it to you, but Alicia will be waiting for us, and she's an impatient little creature.
And this staircase leads to my aunt's rooms. Oh, Phoebe, guarding your mistress's door as usual. I should like to show these gentlemen Lady Audley's rooms. Are they in good order?
Yes, Miss Alicia. But the door is locked, and my lady's taken the key with her to London.
Taken the key? Why? Afraid we go into her rooms and pry about? Meddle with all the jewellery my father's bought her? I did so want you both to see her portrait. There's something decidedly odd about it.
Odd?
Yes. It's as though the painter had been inspired to see through her normal expression to... well, to some other expression beneath it, which ordinary eyes cannot perceive.
Metaphysics, Alicia. A portrait is a portrait, and my lady is my lady. Still, it does sound intriguing.
Will that be all, miss?
Yes, Phoebe.
Thank you, miss. Sir.
Is there no other way of getting into the room? A secret passage somewhere? This old place is full of them.
Well, if you don't mind crawling on your hands and knees, there is a passage from my old nursery, which runs along under the floor of Lady Audley's rooms. You'll come out in her dressing room. A Persian rug covers the trapdoor, but you'll easily manage to raise it.
I say, George, what a lark. I used to do this sort of thing when I was a lad.
Do you really think we ought?
No, don't worry, old chap. Alicia, lead the way. Oh, musty. Full of rats, I don't wonder. Are you all right, George?
Yes, but I don't think it's right what we're doing.
Of course it is. This looks like the trapdoor. Now, I'll go up first, George. Now, give me your hand. Grab it. Push. That's the ticket. My word. Every luxury a woman could wish for. Well, my uncle certainly must love her a great deal. Look at this jewelry left lying about. This china and all these bottles of perfume. Their gold stoppers haven't been replaced. No wonder the atmosphere is so oppressive. She must have left in an awful hurry.
I don't like it here, Bob. I feel we're intruding.
Nonsense. This must be my lady's portrait. I'll just remove the cover. Alicia's right. It is odd. I'll wager the man who painted this is a pre-Raphaelite. Look at those masses of ringlets. He's put in every shimmer of gold, every shadow of
pale brown. What about the lurid brightness he's given to her complexion and the strange light in her eyes? No one but a pre-Raphaelite could have painted that pretty, pouting mouth with such a hard, I'd say wicked look. What do you think of it, George? George, dear boy, have you been mesmerized by it?
Let's go back to the inn, Bob. I think there's a storm coming.
Forgive me, Bob, for my bad mood last night. To tell you the truth, storms upset me. Always have.
Think nothing of it. Now, shall we go up to London by express, as we arranged, or stop here and dine with my uncle tonight?
Well, it's such a glorious morning. Suppose we take another turn with the Rod and Line and go up to town by the 6:15?
Capital. And I'm delighted to see you so cheerful again.
Yes, m'lady?
Help me change, Phoebe. I'm sticky from the heat.
Yes, m'lady.
And what have you been doing to keep yourself busy this afternoon?
Altering your blue dress, m'lady. It is rather dark on this side of the house, so I took it up to my own room and worked at the window.
Your room overlooks the Lime Walk, does it not?
Yes, m'lady.
Phoebe, you're a good, industrious girl. As long as I live, you'll never want a firm friend or a £20 note.
Huh? 4 o'clock. I've been asleep for hours. George? George? Yes, fishing rods here. Line in the water. I wonder where he took himself. George? George! I know. He's gone back to the inn for a spot of dinner. Selfish beggar.
No, sir. He ain't been in since you went out together this morning. But Sir Michael called and left a message asking you and the other gentleman to go down to dinner at the court tonight.
Ah, that's it. He must have gone straight there.
Ah, Mr. Audley, sir. Sir Michael's expecting you.
Yes, did another gentleman call here earlier? My friend, George Tallboys.
Yes, sir, he did.
What time was that?
About 2, sir. He asked for Sir Michael, and when I told him the master was out, he said he'd go and look for her ladyship, who was in the Lime Walk.
Has he been back since?
No, sir.
Drat the man. It's, what, 6 o'clock now. That's 4 hours and no sign of him.
May I suggest, sir, that he may have taken the 3:30 back to London?
Taken the train back? By Jove, you may be right. I'll inquire at the station right away, but tell Sir Michael I'll be back for dinner.
Yes, sir.
Oh, do go on, Lady Audley. I apologize for my lateness.
Bob, where's your friend?
Would you believe it, Uncle? He's gone back to London and left me in the lurch. He must have got into one of his gloomy moods and taken the train back this afternoon. The station master remembers a man with a beard buying a ticket.
What a dreadful catastrophe. How will you manage without him?
To tell you the truth, Alicia, I'm rather uneasy about him.
Why is that?
George had a bitter blow a year ago in the death of his wife, and he's not yet got over it. He often talks strangely, and I sometimes think that one day his grief will get the better of him and he'll do something rash.
I did not think men were capable of these deep and lasting affections. I thought one pretty face was as good as another to them.
George Tallboys is not one of those men. I firmly believe that his wife's death has broken his heart.
How sad. Shall we go in for dinner?
No. Get down.
Down, I say.
Welcome home, sir.
Ah, Mrs. Maloney, I'm glad I caught you. Where's Mr. Tallboys?
Mr. Tallboys hasn't been here, sir, since you went away together.
Oh, wretched man. Worrying me like this. Where could he have gone? He knows no one else in England. No, wrong. He does. Captain Malden, his father-in-law, and Georgie, his son. Of course, that's where he's gone. Southampton.
Yes, Mr. Audley. Son-in-law came here by the mail late last night. Stayed an hour or so. Had a chat to me, saw his little Georgie, and then left.
What's the meaning of all this, Captain Mulder?
You knew nothing of his intention, then?
What intention?
To return to Australia.
Well, he mentioned it a year ago, yes, but...
Well, he sails today from Liverpool. He told me the rough life out there was the only thing to suit him.
Yes, one of our line, the Victoria Regina, set sail this afternoon, bound for Melbourne, but there was no one with the name of Tallboys among the passengers.
Perhaps he arrived at the last moment.
One passenger did that, a Mr. Thomas Brown, you can see from the list. This is the last name. An accident had delayed him. His arm was in a sling.
Well, that confirms it. George Tallboys never sailed for Australia. If he's alive, he's still in England. And if he's dead...
Are you joining us, Audley, on our round this morning? I promise we shan't go too fast for you.
Thank you, no, Sir Harry. I shall remain indoors, if you don't mind.
My cousin prefers to keep Lady Audley company. Don't you, Robert?
I'm very pleased for Robert's company.
And so am I. I want my dear Lucy to be happy while the fellows are out. Bob's a perfect companion.
Thank you, Uncle.
As long as he keeps those dogs of his out of my way.
I promise I shall.
Lucy, dear. If you'd prefer me to stay.
Oh, no, no, of course not. I shall be perfectly content with my painting.
You know, my darling, since you consented to be my wife, I've been the happiest man alive. My fear is that the great difference between our ages would somehow spoil our love and round it. You are the dearest, sweetest wife a man could ever have. And I shall be ever grateful to you for marrying me.
Dearest, dearest husband. I hope we shall always be as happy as we are now.
I'll make sure we are.
You'll always take care of me, won't you?
Always.
My dear, charming couple together, Felicia. Your stepmother's made my uncle a young man again.
What has she done to you, Robert? You were always a poor, spiritless fellow. But this Christmas, all you're fit for is lolling about reading Tennyson to my lady.
Dear Alicia, don't be so violent. Lady Audley interests me, and my uncle's friends don't.
No, that's obvious. You pretend to be amiable, but all the time you look down on us. You're nothing but a selfish, conceited, cold-hearted...
Well, I'm off. Coming, Alicia.
Ah, the young swain calls.
Don't you dare laugh at him. He'd go through fire and water for the girl he loves. Well, you...
Have you upset my stepdaughter, Robert?
It seems I have, Aunt, though I did not intend to, I assure you.
Come to the drawing room and sit by me while I go on with my painting.
It's coming on excellently, Aunt. Where did you learn to paint so well?
Boarding school. I was an orphan, you know.
I confess, my lady, I know very little about you.
My parents died when I was very young. When I left school, I had to make my own way in the world.
What did you do?
Oh, what does a young woman do in such circumstances? I went as a governess to various families. That was how I met Sir Michael. Mr. Dawson, the physician who attends Sir Michael, engaged me to teach his daughters. Do you know Mr. Dawson?
Of him. I hear he's a good fellow.
Oh, the very dearest of good creatures. He paid me all of 25 pounds a year. And fancy, these colours I'm using cost a guinea each.
Quite a change for you, my lady.
What an eccentric creature you are. Do you know, you sometimes puzzle me.
Not more than you puzzle me, dear aunt.
Tell me, Robert, what news of that friend of yours?
Mr. Tallboys? None. He's vanished without trace. I learned he might have gone to Australia, but somehow I doubt it.
So what do you make of it?
I don't know. But I know I shan't be happy until I've found him.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Huh? Happy New Year to you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Oh, at last they've gone. And we're alone again, my dear. Isn't that nice?
Yes, my darling.
All except Robert. How long will he stay?
As long as he likes. Why? He's not upset you with his dogs and lazy habits, has he?
Oh, no, no, he's behaved very properly. Only, I'm rather a young aunt for such a nephew, and...
And what, Lucy?
Poor Alicia's rather jealous of any attention Robert pays me.
Hmm?
You know how she feels about him. I think it would make her happier if he were to bring his visit to a close.
I'm a fool not to have thought of this before. It was unjust of me to expose poor Bob to your fascinations. He shall go tonight.
May I pour your tea now, sir?
No, thank you, Phoebe. I'm surprised to find you here at Castle Inn. Have you left Lady Audley's service?
Yes, sir, but only because me and Luke were married a few weeks ago.
And now the two of you manage this inn?
We own it, sir.
Oh, you've done well for yourself. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
And you're still close enough to Audley Court to visit Lady Audley whenever you wish.
Yes, sir. Luke and me's very fortunate.
How long have you known Lady Audley?
Oh, she was governess at Mr. Dawson's when I worked there. She was there about a year and a half.
She was then Lucy,
Graham.
Ah, yes. Lucy Graham. From London.
Hmm? So I believe, sir.
Always as cheerful as she is now?
Always, sir. Will that be all, sir?
Yes, Phoebe.
What's keeping you, woman?
Just coming, Luke.
Ah, Mr. Marks, I was just congratulating your wife on owning this fine old inn.
Is that what you call this? I call it the dullest, most ramshackle hole as ever a man set foot in.
Then you don't particularly like it here?
I might have had me a proper public in Romford if some folks hadn't been so precious stingy. I say, what's £100?
No!
No, woman, you're not going to stop my mouth. I say again, what's £100 if you're as rich as some?
What, indeed?
Who's that, then? Oh, it's her. I'm off.
Who is it, Phoebe?
It's Lady Audley, sir. My lady. Can I fetch you some hot tea, my lady?
No, Phoebe, please leave us.
Yes, my lady.
What a morning for you to be out, aunt.
I wish to see you, Robert. I felt an apology was due to you. My dear, silly husband took it into his head that you were paying me too much attention. And so our pleasant family circle's broken up.
Well, don't be alarmed. My uncle's nothing to fear from me in that respect.
Oh, you don't dislike me, I hope.
No, but since the disappearance of my friend, whom I love dearly, I fear my feelings towards others have become somewhat embittered.
Oh, you mean Mr. Tallboys who went to Australia?
I don't think he went there. I've advertised in the Times for him and in newspapers in Sydney and Melbourne, but I've had no replies. So now I must take the matter further.
How do you propose to do that?
He left all his effects in my chambers. I mean to go through them.
What will you discover from his coats and boots?
No, letters, my lady. Letters from his friends, his father, his wife.
Have you read any of her letters?
No, but I remember seeing George place them in his trunk.
I expect they'd be in the usual womanly scrawl.
Unlike your own pretty hand, Lady Audley.
Oh, you know my hand, do you?
I've seen it only once, but I'm sure I'd recognize it again.
Dear Mr. Audley, your letter concerning my son George's alleged disappearance has left me unmoved, which is the reason I have not replied sooner to it. If you know my son, as you tell me you do, you must also know that since his wedding day, I have washed my hands of all responsibility for his actions. In my view, this absurd disappearance is only in character with his preposterous marriage. Yours sincerely, Harcourt Tallboys. P.S. If my son has any low design of alarming me by this pretense and thereby obtaining a pecuniary advantage, he has forgotten the man with whom he is dealing.
Dear Mr. Tallboys, it is unlikely that George is hiding himself for the reason you suggest, as he has left £20,000 in his banker's hands. I trust you will have no objections if I pay you a visit, as I wish to tell you all I know, and for you to say what I am to do.
Do? Do, Mr. Audley. I am not interested in what you do. From the hour my son married the daughter of a drunken pauper, he ceased to exist for me. I wish him no ill. He is simply dead to me.
Mr. Tallboys, I've reason to believe George may well be dead.
What?
Sit down, Clara, and keep your workbox on your knee, if you please.
I'm sorry, Father.
Let me help you, Miss Tallboys.
Mr. Audley, perhaps when you finish looking for reels of cotton on the floor, you'll be good enough to explain yourself.
I believe your son died last September.
Why do you insist on saying that, Mr. Audley?
Clara, Mr. Audley came to see me, not you. But kindly answer my daughter's question, if you're able to.
George disappeared when we were together on a fishing holiday. I have made all possible inquiries about his whereabouts, including advertisements in newspapers both here and abroad. No trace of him exists.
A clever trick. Your friend is not dead, Mr. Audley. He only wishes to alarm me so that I'll forgive him for his disobedience and stupidity.
Mr. Tallboys, sir, what would you say to me if I told you I thought George may have been murdered?
Murdered?
I'd say you were mad, sir.
Mad? Well, then, so be it. From this moment, I wash my hands of the whole business. Good morning, Mr. Tallboys. Miss Tallboys. Neither of them cared. Neither of them cared a damn.
Mr. Audley? Mr. Audley?
Miss Tallboys?
I must speak to you, but I don't want my father to see us. Oh, come with me, please, hurry. Here, this way. Mr. Audley, I believe what you said about my brother. I know him to be a good, kind, thoughtful man. He'd never do what my father suggested.
I apologize, Miss Tallboys. I'd not have spoken as I did, had I known.
But I loved him. How should anyone know when I've not had the power to welcome him home since he married against my father's wishes? And now you say he's been murdered.
Pray calm yourself, Miss Tallboys. I may be wrong.
You told my father you would abandon all idea of discovering the truth, that you'd leave my brother's fate a mystery. But you'll not do so, Mr. Audley. You will find out what has happened to him.
If you only knew what misery to me and others may be involved in discovering the truth, Miss Tallboys, you'd scarcely ask me to pursue this business any further.
But I do ask you.
What if I answer no?
Then I'll do it myself. I will follow up every clue just as you have done. I'm of age. I have money. I shall employ people.
You leave me no choice.
I've grown up in an atmosphere of suppression. I've been allowed no friends. My mother died when I was very young. And my father, well, he's always been to me what you saw today. I've had no one else but George. I must know what has become of him.
Will you trust me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Then I promise you George will not be forgotten. Now, do you have any of his letters?
Unfortunately, only two. One he wrote soon after his marriage, the other the night before he left for Australia to make his fortune.
Please send them to me. Here's my card.
And you'll write and let me know how your inquiries are progressing.
Of course. Let us only hope I am wrong and that George is still alive.
If only it was so. But until we know...
Until we know, Miss Tallboys, heaven help those who stand between me and the secret of his disappearance.
What a strange thing life is.
If that girl hadn't followed me out, I'd have left her father's house thinking her cold and hard. I now know her to be a noble and beautiful woman. She's very like George. The same statuesque features and calm brown eyes. What an idiot I am thinking of her.
All right. I'll attend to you in a moment, but I've something more important to do. George's truck. Ah, here it is. Just where he left it. It's not locked. Oh, what have we here? Pipes. Old playbills. Scraps of newspapers. Ah, at last, some letters. Ah, that's two from his father. And these are from Clara Tallboys. None from his wife, Helen. But I'm sure he said he had a packet of them. And yes, I remember him sorting through them, tying them up with a faded ribbon, which had once been hers. But there were tears in his eyes. Did he take them with him? What are these? Some books. Latin grammar. Tom Jones. An annual for the year 1853. An inscription. To my dear George, with undying love, Helen Maldon. What a pretty hand Miss Maldon had.
Is that you home again, Mr. Audley?
In here, Mrs. Maloney.
I was thinking it was the locksmith again.
What locksmith?
The one you ordered, sir, to examine all the locks.
I gave no such order.
Oh, sir.
But somebody did.
Dear Mr. Audley, I send the two letters from George. Please preserve and return them. Clara Tallboys.
My dear Clara, I have done it. In spite of our father's objection, I have married my adorable Helen, the sweetest girl who ever lived. Oh, I wish you could meet her. The low music of her gentle voice, her childish charm, her rosy lips and liquid blue eyes, they'd enchant you as they have me. Last night I left my lovely wife asleep with my son in her arms. Life without money or any prospects is too hard to bear. I'm going to Australia either to make my fortune or die.
See us, Robert.
I came as soon as I received your note, Alicia. Is my uncle very ill?
The worst has passed, but we've been very anxious.
I'm sure you have, Lady Audley. After all, your happiness, your safety depend on him.
I know that. Those who strike me, Mr. Audley, must strike through him.
Bob? Bob, is that you?
Yes, Uncle.
I've been thinking of you a good deal, Bob. And I want you and Lucy to be friends. You must learn to think of her as your aunt. I know she's young and beautiful.
Sir Michael.
You do understand me, don't you, Bob?
Perfectly, Uncle. And I give you my word of honour. I am steeled against my lady's fascination. She knows that as well as I do.
You silly Robert. Take everything so seriously.
It's Mr. Dawson, Papa. Come to examine you. We'll leave you.
Thank you, Miss Audley. And how is my patient this evening?
You'll take a cup of tea with us, Robert.
Thank you, Aunt. Alicia, my dear, have you worn yourself out looking after your father? You're not looking well.
Perhaps not. But what does it matter? Who cares whether I'm well or ill?
I care.
Do you, Bob? Really?
Sir Harry Towers cares.
Oh.
Oh, come, he's a nice enough chap, and he's one of the richest fellows in the country.
I don't
care about money. That's because you've always had it.
Ah, here's Mr. Dawson. Well, sir, how goes your patient?
There's no cause for alarm. I merely looked in to bid you all good night.
Good night, Mr. Dawson.
Let me walk
Mr.
you to the front door, sir.
Pray don't trouble yourself, Mr. Audley. I know my way.
No trouble. Do you mind if we step into the library for a moment?
Certainly. But if you're alarmed about your uncle...
Not now that I've seen him. It's Lady Audley I wish to talk to you about, or, to be precise, Miss Lucy Graham, as she once was.
Pardon me, Mr. Audley. You can scarcely expect me to discuss your uncle's wife without his permission. I respected the lady as Miss Graham, sir, and I esteem her doubly
You
as...
must, sir.
Must?
Yes, if you count yourself my uncle's friend. It was at your house he met Lucy Graham.
It was.
She said she was an orphan, did she not?
Yes. Why? Have you reason to doubt her?
I'm afraid I have, Mr. Dawson. I may wrong her. I hope I do. But I think that the woman who bears my uncle's name is unworthy to be his wife.
Good heavens.
To prove my suspicions right or wrong, I need to know all about her from this year, 1859, back over a period of 6 years.
And you assure me your motive is an honourable one?
I do, absolutely.
Well, sir, there's very little I can tell you. Lucy Graham was married to your uncle last June, 58. And before that, she lived in my house as governess a little more than 13 months. So she came to us in 56.
Came to you from where?
A school kept by a lady named Vincent in West Brompton.
Do you by any chance remember this lady's address?
Well, if I think hard, I might. Number 9, I recall that. 9 something Villas. Portland. No, something about the moon or sun.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Audley. It was a long time ago.
Of course, I understand. Well, perhaps at home
Crescent.
You may...
Crescent. That was it. 9 Crescent Villas. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Dawson.
The two of you have been closeted together so long, I've become quite alarmed. Is it Sir Michael you've been talking about?
Excuse me, Lady Audley. I have another patient to see.
Oh. Well, Robert? What could you find to say to Mr. Dawson, or he to you? You're almost strangers to each other.
A legal matter.
Really? I did not think you took the law seriously.
Up until now, that has been true. I've always shrunk from my responsibilities and duties. But sometimes, in this troublesome life, we are forced to do things we'd rather avoid. Have you ever heard of the theory of circumstantial evidence?
What a question to ask a poor, silly woman.
From a few straws, a scrap of paper, a button off a coat... From an inscription in an old album. From these, a rope can be made, strong enough to hang a murderer.
You will pardon me, Mr. Audley, for detaining you for so long.
It is I who should apologize for intruding upon you, Mrs. Vincent, but my motive is a very serious one. You remember that lady whose name I wrote on my card?
Perfectly.
May I ask how much you know of her history since she left your school?
Well, scarcely anything at all. Miss Graham obtained a situation in the family of a surgeon in Essex on my recommendation, and I've not heard from her since.
But you have communicated with her?
No, indeed.
Early last September, were you not dangerously ill and she came to visit you at your request?
Me ill? I've never been seriously ill in my life. And if I were, I would hardly think to write to Miss Graham.
I see. If I ask you a few straightforward questions about Miss Graham, will you answer them?
Most certainly. I know nothing to her disadvantage. But first, would you tell me why you're so interested in the young lady?
A family matter, Mrs. Vincent. Miss Graham is a relative of mine of whom I've lost all trace. It'll be to her advantage if I can find her.
Well, in that case, what do you wish to know?
Well, could you tell me when she first came to you?
Oh, no good asking me. I'm hopeless at dates. But Tonks, my assistant, will know. She remembers everything. Tonks? Tonks!
You called, Mrs. Vincent?
This gentleman is a relative of Miss Graham's. Do you remember when she first came to us?
In August 1854, the 17th or 18th.
There. What did I tell you? Tonks remembers everything. Is there anything else you wish to know?
Yes. Did you know where Miss Graham came from?
From the seaside.
Well, only that?
Oh, she knew how to keep her secret, she did.
Now, Tonks, you mustn't show this gentleman that you were jealous. She was never as useful as you.
No, just ornamental with her blue eyes and curly hair. You love to show her off.
Well, perhaps Miss Graham left some knick-knacks behind?
Only an old hat box. Not worth anything. I keep my bonnet in it. Shall I bring it?
Oh, please.
And while you're out, tell Mary to go on practising.
Very well.
When the cat's away.
Yes. Have you many pupils?
One can never have enough, Mr. Audley.
Miss Graham, was she popular with them?
With everyone. Such a sweet, innocent girl. I was sorry to see her go.
Here you are. It's just a battered old box, as I said. It's been all over by the look of those labels. There's one from Turin.
We travelled to Italy, Bob. Spent 6 months in splendid style.
What's this? One label pasted over another. Could I trouble you for a little water and a piece of sponge?
You may use this water in the cat saucer. And Tonks, give Mr. Audley your handkerchief.
Thank you. It shouldn't be too difficult to remove them.
They're stuck together. Be careful, you'll tear them.
I think I can separate them. There, done it.
Well, Mr. Audley, and what have you discovered?
That my uncle's married a designing and infamous woman. A good deal. Thank you both very much. I'll trouble you no more, ladies. Good day.
To Clara Tallboys, inquiries proceeding stop. Need to know name of seaport town where George met and married Helen Malden.
To Robert Audley, the name of the town is Wildernsea in Yorkshire.
That should warm up the lounge a bit.
Thank you, landlord.
Well, it's a pleasure having you stay at my hotel, sir. We see so little company in Wildernsea at this time of the year. Oh, now, you was asking about Captain Malden and his daughter.
Yes, that's right.
Well, the captain was a firm favourite here, and so was Miss Malden. I knew he was a bit of a humbug, if I may say so, but we got on well enough. Always came to me with his troubles. Oh, one day he was in a terrible state. I thought he'd been drinking more than usual, but then I realised he was very upset.
He's gone. Gone.
Who's gone, Captain?
Helen, my daughter. Just took off this morning without so much as a kiss. Left me this note. Here, you read it. See for yourself how cruelly she's treated me. Has done so much for her.
Dear father, I'm weary of my life here since George abandoned me. I want to cut myself off from everything that binds me to my hateful past. Forgive me if I have been fretful and capricious of late, but you know the secret, which is the key to my life.
I don't suppose you can remember the date of that note, can you?
Better than that, sir. I can show it to you. The captain forgot it here that day, and I've kept it ever since in case he asked for it. I'll fetch it for you.
Miss Tonks told me that Lucy Graham entered Mrs. Vincent's school on the 17th or 18th of August, 1854. The date of this note, therefore, will tell me whether or not there is any connection between Miss Graham.
Well, then, here we are, sir.
Thank you. Excellent. The letter's dated the 16th of August. That means that not more than 48 hours could have elapsed between Helen Tallboys leaving Wildernsea and Lucy Graham arriving at the school. I've reached a gap between their two lives. My next task is to bridge it. Thank you, landlord. There's just one more thing. Would you recognize Helen Tallboys if you were to see her again?
Like one of my own daughters, sir.
And pray, Mr. Audley, where have you been wandering these past weeks?
Oh, here and there, Aunt. My last stop was at Wildernsea in Yorkshire. Do you know it?
No.
That was where my poor friend George Tallboys met his wife.
Oh, that man again. I declare you're becoming quite tiresome about your friend.
Perhaps, Lady Audley, but I have good reason. Shall we go through to the Lime Walk? We can walk unobserved there.
Horrible place in winter. Why bring me here? It must make me nervous.
Shall I tell you why you're nervous, my lady?
I'm always nervous. I'm worth a fortune to Mr. Dawson in pills.
Because, for you, this is haunted.
Haunted? What can you mean?
Haunted by the ghost of George Talbot.
Oh, please, no more of him. I beg of you. What is he to me that you should worry me about him?
He was a total stranger to you, my lady.
Of course he was.
Then you won't mind hearing his story, as I understand it.
If you must. But please, be quick about it. I wish to return to Sir Michael. He'll be wondering where I am.
When George returned to England from Australia with £20,000 in his purse, his first and only thought was of his wife.
Whom he'd cruelly deserted, didn't you say?
I met him a few hours after he reached England. I saw how anxious he was to be reunited with her and his son, to lavish upon them his hard-won fortune. Then he read the announcement of her death in the Times. A terrible blow it was to him.
How sad.
But it was a lie.
Indeed, and who'd announced the death of Mrs. Tallboys if Mrs. Tallboys was still alive?
The lady herself.
Oh, it's ridiculous. What grounds have you?
I've examined the files of all the newspapers published in this area, and I found in one a brief paragraph copied from a London journal mentioning that a Mr. George Tallboys, who'd found one of the largest nuggets of gold in Australia, was about to sail to England. That was dated July 1857.
So?
So, anyone residing in Essex in July 1857 would, if they saw that item, know of George's imminent return.
And what has that to do with the death of Mrs. Tallboys?
In her husband's absence, Mrs. Tallboys played a very dangerous game.
Hmm?
She had bigamously married a far richer man with a distinguished name, thinking, hoping, her first husband was dead. Then, when she realized that the game was up, she was forced to concoct a conspiracy.
A conspiracy? That really is absurd.
To put her real husband off the scent. Someone, some poor wretch, died and was buried at Ventnor in the Isle of Wight in the name of Helen Tallboys.
But who?
Ah, that, dear aunt, is a question only two or three other people can answer. And I aim to make them before long.
I believe you are deranged, Robert. You have formed this obsession about your friend who probably at this moment is living thousands of miles away. You won't admit that the news of his wife's death affected him so badly that he ran away without telling you. And now you come to me and you torment me. By what right do you do this?
By the right of circumstantial evidence. The evidence of time and place. Of handwriting. I have in my possession a letter Helen Tallboys wrote to her father at Wildernsea when she left for London. Do you know whose handwriting hers resembles?
Many women have similar handwriting. It's no more than a coincidence.
But if a series of coincidences lead to the same point, George's wife never returned to her father and son after leaving them. She changed her old identity for a new one. She disappeared as Helen Tallboys on the 16th of August, 1854, and on the 17th reappeared as Lucy Graham, a friendless orphan fit only to ornament a school in the suburbs.
You are mad. You're quite mad.
I visited Mrs. Vincent and took from a box in her possession two labels, one pasted over the other. The upper label bears the name of Lucy Graham. The lower, that of Mrs. George Tallboys.
I warn you, Robert. Fancies such as yours have landed people in private asylums for the rest of their lives.
You don't frighten me, Lady Audley.
Do I not? Then why have you gone so pale?
George Tallboys was last heard asking for you here at Audley Court. He was last seen by one of your servants entering these gardens by that little iron gate that creaks on its hinges. But he was never seen to leave.
Why do you torment me so with your delusions? And what harm have I ever done you?
I believe he met his death close to where we stand. Where he now lies, I have no idea, but I'm quite prepared to level this place to the ground, root up every tree.
Stop! I won't listen to another word. I'm going back to Sir Michael. He will protect me.
Run, Lady Audley! Don't stop till you're too far away from here to injure the good man you deceived.
She's right, though. My uncle would rather think me mad than believe her guilty. I told her she did not frighten me, but those starry blue eyes, for all their beauty, had a dangerous light in them. I think I'll sleep tonight at the Castle Inn.
George Tallboys murdered at Audley Court. Pulled down this house. Did Robert say this, Lucy?
He said something of the kind. Something that frightened me very much.
What could have put such a horrible fancy into the poor boy's head? This Mr. Tallboys, a perfect stranger to all of us, murdered here?
I know. I shall never be able to see Mr. Audley again.
And you shall not, my love. You shall not.
You mustn't think me very unkind, my dear, but he really seems to have taken some absurd notion into his head about me.
About you, Lucy?
Yes. He seems to connect me, in some vague manner, with Mr. Tallboy's disappearance.
Impossible. You must have misunderstood him.
I don't think so.
Then he must be mad. He must be mad. Good heavens, what a mysterious business this is.
Oh, I fear I've distressed you.
Yes, my dear, but you were quite right to talk to me frankly. I must think it over, decide what's best to be done.
You wouldn't let anyone influence you against me, would you, dear?
Of course not, my love. Why do you ask?
Because there are wicked as well as mad people in this world whose interest it would be to injure me.
And they'd better not try it.
I've been afraid of you, Robert Audley, but perhaps the time will come when you will have cause to be afraid of me. But will you stop now? Will anything stop you but death? I wasn't wicked when I was young. I'm not really wicked now. It's only that others force me to act as I do. I suffer far more than they do. Come in.
I beg pardon, my lady, for intruding at this late hour.
No, no, Phoebe. I'm glad you've come. Sit with me by the fire and brush my hair as you used to.
Yes, my lady.
And to what do I owe this visit?
It's Luke, ma'am.
Not money again. Do you know, Phoebe, my jewel case has been emptied to meet your demands, and my pin money's overdrawn half a year. And what is it this time?
The Christmas rent's still owing, and there's a bailiff in the inn tonight. We're to be sold up tomorrow, unless...
The money's paid. Heaven help me if I don't pay it. All right, Phoebe, you shall have it.
Thank you, m'lady. Oh, I almost forgot, so worried was I about this other matter. I've a letter for you.
Give it to me, quickly. Should Mrs. George Tallboys really have survived the date of her supposed death, and should she exist in the person of the lady suspected and accused by the writer of this, the proprietor of the Victoria Hotel Wildernsea would no doubt consent to dispel a delusion or confirm a suspicion. So, Mr. Audley, It's to be a duel to the death, then. Sir Michael must never know. The truth will kill him. Oh, perhaps I should run away and disappear. But where could I go? What would become of me? I've no money. I'd have to go back to that old life of poverty and humiliation and wear myself out in that long struggle and die as my mother died. No. No, Mr. Robert Audley. I will not go back. Not for you, not for anyone. Phoebe, is Mr. Audley still at the inn?
Yes, milady. He's in room 3, the one next to ours.
I'm coming with you to see this bailiff and pay him myself.
But, my lady, it's nearly midnight.
I know the time, but I've set my mind on going. I can't trust your Luke to use the money for the purpose I give it.
Why didn't you give the money to Phoebe? We don't want no fine ladies up here prying and poking their noses into everything.
Hush, Luke, when my lady's been so kind.
Oh, damn her kindness. She won't get no snivelling gratitude from me. Whatever she does for us, she does because she's obliged to.
I didn't come here in the dead of night to listen to your insolence. How much is the debt?
£9.
Here. Take it. And I want a receipt from the bailiff before I return home. Oh, Phoebe, I shall faint from weariness if I don't bathe my face. Give me a candle. I'll get some water from your room.
But I...
No, stay where you are. I know where it is. Don't forget, I came here to inspect the place when you purchased it. With my money.
Yeah, much good it's done us. What do you want to bring her here for?
I couldn't help it, Luke. She insisted.
What a dismal, evil-smelling hovel this is. Certainly won't be missed. Ah, number 3. No, not a sound. Sweet dreams, Robert Audley. And this is Phoebe's room. What gaudy chintz curtains. And all that cheap calico draped everywhere. How dangerous if someone were to be careless with a candle.
I'm leaving now, Phoebe. Will you come with me?
Well, yes, my lady. But where's the candle?
The wind blew it out, so I left it up there. Come, let's not dawdle. It's very late.
What a long day it's been, Alicia.
Yes, my lady. Nothing but drizzle and mist and wind all day. And now it's too late and dark for anybody to go out. It's fine.
Why haven't they sent someone to tell us about the fire? What a fine sight it was from the road. That silly Phoebe, worrying about her Luke. And her precious guest. Ran like a hare to save them.
I must go and dress for dinner. Are you coming, my lady?
Oh, presently, my dear. I'm dressed already, you see. Oh,
if you'll excuse me, then.
Perhaps they've been afraid to break the news to Sir Michael. Who'll come, I wonder? The doctor, or the rector? Some important person, at least. Ah, there's someone now. Who's there? Mr. Dawson? I can't see in this light. Is it you, Sir Michael?
Good evening, Lady Audley.
Mr. Audley.
Steady, my lady. Let me help you indoors.
I'm not surprised my presence has shocked you, Lady Audley. The inn was burnt to the ground. Nothing stands. But as you see, I am in perfect health. Fortunately, my room was so damp and chilly, I had a servant make up a bed for me on the sofa in the small ground floor sitting room. Otherwise, doubtless, I'd be as dead as George Tallboys, and by the same hand.
This news is a great shock to me, and very
sad. No more prevaricating, my lady.
Phoebe Marks told me you went with her late last night, and we know why. You wished to kill me. Sometimes I wonder whether I was not perhaps mad to think that a young and lovely woman should be capable of so foul a crime as murder. But after last night, all wonder is past. You'll pollute this house no more. Now confess to Sir Michael who you are and what you've done, or I will gather together my witnesses.
Bring Sir Michael quickly. What do I care? God knows I've struggled hard enough against you, but you've conquered, Robert. Well done. You've defeated a mad woman. Let Sir Michael hear the secret of my life.
Lucy, tell me Robert is mad. Tell me so, my love, before I kill him.
No, Sir Michael, he's told you the truth.
The truth?
You've been a good husband to me. Better than I've deserved. But I can't feel sorry, not even for you. I can only feel my own misery.
Oh, Lucy!
When I was very little, I remember asking a perfectly natural question for a child. Where was my mother? In answer, I was told she was ill and had been since I was a baby. But years later, the secret came out. My mother was in an asylum, and I bear my mother's taint. As I grew older, I realized that my only escape from a life of poverty was through a good marriage. I knew I was pretty and could be charming if I put my mind to it. My father and I settled in Wildensee to await my wandering prince. George Tallboys was his name. As long as his money lasted, we were happy. On the continent, we travelled in style, but when we came back to Wildensee...
No, Helen, please don't ask me again to write to my father.
But he's rich. Your sister lives in luxury while we starve.
I won't. I can't.
I wish you'd never married me. I woke up to find my husband had left me. I was back where I'd started. Only now I also had a son I could not abide because he reminded me of my failure. I ran away. I began a new life. But it was no better than the old. Poverty, dependence, drudgery. And then you, Sir Michael, came into my life and asked me to marry you. My ambitions were at last realized. For 3 years I hadn't heard from my husband. I had a right to think him dead. And though I did not love you, I would have remained a loyal, affectionate wife to you.
Oh, Lucy. Lucy.
I'd been poor once, and now I was rich. And I sent my father large sums of money. But fate would not allow me to be good. Within a month of my marriage, I read in one of our Essex papers of George's return. What was to be done? George, I knew, would find me in time, even in this remote spot. I went to see my father in Southampton.
I've received this letter from George, wanting to know where you are, and giving me this address in London for me to reply if you've moved. What am I to do?
Nothing. When does he say his ship will arrive?
At the end of August.
Well, that doesn't give us much time.
What can we do, Ellie?
Oh, stop snivelling for one thing. If he learns I'm dead, he won't pursue me.
What?
But he must be convinced of it. Otherwise, if I know George, he'll hunt me down.
How will we do that?
I must think. As I sat in my father's miserable hovel, playing with my child, who was pleased with my gifts, but had no idea who I was, the woman who attended him came to fetch him. We got into conversation. It appeared she had a daughter.
No older than yourself, Mum, and like yourself, fair and slender. But she's ailing, Mum, sick with consumption. The doctor says she's only a few weeks to live.
Consumption, you say?
Yes, Mum. And me with 5 other youngsters to feed.
I was about to dismiss the woman with a sovereign when an idea flashed upon me with painful suddenness. I knew what was to be done. I arranged to visit the sick girl. Her description, carelessly given, might tally nearly enough with my own. She was clearly near to death and hardly knew what was happening. Her mother was poor and greedy and easy to buy. My father hired lodgings on the Isle of Wight, and the girl entered the house as Mrs. Tallboys. She was attended by the doctor as Mrs. Tallboys. As Mrs. Tallboys, she died, and in that name she was buried. The advertisement was placed in the Times and the tombstone ordered.
I cannot hear any more. Robert, as you have brought about this discovery, I ask you to look after this... this lady I called my wife.
Oh, sir, how can I forgive myself for having laid this grief upon you?
No, no, Robert, you did right. I only wish that God had been so merciful as to take my miserable life before tonight. But you did right. I leave all to you. But you will not be cruel. You will remember how much I loved. Loved.
Taking me to a living grave.
No, my lady. To a place where you'll be treated kindly by people who have no knowledge of your story.
If I were not such a miserable coward, I'd defy you. I'd run away.
How far could you run from your conscience?
My conscience? You mean about George?
Yes. I mean to find out what happened to my friend.
He goaded me, Robert. He was as merciless with me as you were. We were by the ancient well at the end of the Lime Tree Walk. He was leaning against it.
How could you have been so cold-hearted, Helen, pretending you were dead? For that I'll never forgive you.
Go away, George. Leave me, I beg of you, before...
Before Sir Michael learns what a fool you've made of him. Too late, Helen. I've decided to tell him.
No, you can't. You wouldn't.
And why not? After what you've done to me, I want you to suffer as I have.
You are nothing to me, George Tallboys. And if you speak to my husband, I'll denounce you as a madman.
No, Helen. You're not running away.
Let me go. You're hurting my arm.
The whole world will know that you're a liar and a bigamist.
Never!
Helen, don't. Oh, push.
My poor friend. How shall I break the news to Clara?
You see, Robert, I'm not frightened to tell you exactly what happened, because you could never use it against me. The shame of seeing me in a criminal dock would kill your uncle.
We are here.
And no sentence can be worse than this. Locked up here, in this madhouse, like my mother, for the rest of my life! Alive. George alive. I can hardly believe my ears.
Yes, Miss Tallboys, it's true. Luke Marks confessed all to me on his deathbed. His burns from the fire at the Castle Inn proved fatal. He told me George wasn't killed by the fall. He only broke his arm. But he managed to raise himself out of the well. Well, you know how strong he is.
Yes.
Luke found him lying in the bushes, and with his help, for which George paid handsomely, he was fixed up by a local doctor and put on a train to London. From there, he went straight to the Isle of Wight to bid farewell to his son, and then to Liverpool. He felt life in England was finished for him.
George gave Luke a letter for me, explaining everything. But it suited that man to keep the secret to himself.
But why? What could he do with it?
Use it to blackmail Lady Audley. So long as she believed George was dead, she was in Luke's power.
And my poor dear brother is now in Australia.
So it would seem. A clerk I'd questioned at the shipping office told me of a late passenger with his arm in a sling. But as his name wasn't Tallboys, I didn't connect him with George.
I must go and find my brother and bring him back to England.
My own thoughts exactly, Miss Tallboys. Shall we go together?
Together, Mr. Audley?
Well, I mean, as man and wife.
Mr. Audley.
Mr. Audley, you're back at last. Mr. George is
here. Mr. George? George Tallboys? What about him?
He's been coming every day while he was in the country.
George!
Hello, Bob!
Down, you hellhounds! Down, you curs! Leave the poor man alone. We've a lot to talk about, George.
In Lady Audley's Secret, by Mary Elizabeth Braddon, dramatized for radio by Jack Gratis, Nigel Havers played Robert Audley, Nicholas Gex, George Tallboys, Nigel Stock, Sir Michael Audley, and Amanda Murray, Lady Audley. Alicia Audley was played by Jill Lidston, Clara by Tammy Ustinov, Phoebe by Frances Jeter, Mrs. Vincent by Margot Boyd, Miss Tonks by Hilda Schroeder, Mrs. Maloney by Jean Trend, Mr. Dawson by Hugh Dixon, Captain Malden by Timothy Bateson, Luke by Stephen Thorne, Harcourt Tallboys by Ronald Baddeley, and Sir Harry Towers by David Goodison. Lady Audley's Secret was directed by Glyn Dearman.
So now we know Lady Audley's secret. Nigel Havers is a National Theatre player.